Welcome to the August 1st, 2017 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you have electronic devices, kindly silence them. And if there should be an emergency, we have exits at the back of the room to my right, to the front of the room to my left. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. Would you please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call, please?
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present?
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be having an executive session later, currently scheduled for 7:30.
Mike, many of us are missing our folders.
Not everyone received them this evening.
Oh.
Starting new stuff.
Sorry about that.
Well, is everyone okay with that?
Of course.
So I started to say that there will be an executive session this evening to talk about a personnel matter, a particular person. I've scheduled it for 7:30, and hopefully, because we don't have too many resolutions tonight, and you all will be concise and brief and crisp, we'll be done with our meeting by then. Let's go to privilege of the floor for the public. The opportunity that folks have to talk to us on any subject. We ask if you'd like to speak to us to please fill out one of the blue cards at the back of the room and hand it up. By speaking here or by asking to speak, you're agreeing to our rules, that you are agreeing to the three-minute time limit, which we have. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that you can that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. And we will note that personnel matters should be directed to the relevant department and or supervisor, or in the case of a department head, to the county administrator, except for the county administrator, county attorney, finance director, and clerk of the legislature, which should be directed to the chair of the legislature. There's a countdown clock to my left on the wall. At the end of the 3 minutes, there's an audible ring. We ask if you're still speaking that you please conclude. The first person I have tonight is David Smith. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening. I'm Dave Smith. I'm the executive director of Tompkins Learning Partners. Some of you might have known us earlier as Literacy Volunteers, but we changed our name like so many people do these days. And we've been around since 1983. We're primarily an agency that serves a literacy purpose here in the county. We work with folks born here in the United States as well as people from, I think last count was 29 different countries who are either immigrants or refugees who come here, many of them with not any type of formal education, and we work with them to be able to read, speak English, use computers, etc. And you folks have been kind enough to fund us for a number of years, and we greatly appreciate your support. One of the things that we've noticed recently is because of some of the issues at the federal level with immigration, that more of our students are coming in desperate to get citizenship. And this last year we had, I believe, 26 students who obtained their citizenship after working with us. So, again, I just wanted to thank you again so much. The other piece I would mention is that we're primarily a volunteer agency. So we have over 100 volunteers who work with our students and a similar greater number of students each year. Some of our tutors give more than their time to more than one person. So any questions you have? Otherwise, I just wanted to say thank you. And I have some handouts. I'd be glad to leave if that's acceptable.
I'd be glad to have them. Please hand them forward. We'll be glad to take them.
I'm not sure I have enough for everyone, but pretty close.
We'll share.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Zaff.
Hello and good evening. My name is Brian Zaff. I'm here tonight as a representative of Alternatives Federal Credit Union and specifically the VITA program. VITA stands for Volunteer Income Tax Assistance. The V for volunteer is critically important to us. Last year we had 57 volunteers who contributed more than 2,500 hours. And that was after completing hours and hours of training in order to be able to do income tax assistance. In the traditional VITA, where we sit down one-on-one and help clients prepare their own taxes, we helped 1,916 Tompkins County resident families to prepare their taxes. So why do we prepare taxes for people? We prepare taxes for people because it's an incredibly important thing to do for people, especially the people that we serve. And in order for you to be served by us, we have a very simple criterion. You simply have to make less than $54,000. So we will help anybody in the county who whose income is under $54,000 to prepare their taxes for free. And the reason we do it is because of vital income tax-related credits that are family supports that can only be accessed by people who properly prepare and understand how to do an income tax return. As I'm sure all of you know, it's not easy to prepare an income tax return these days. So we sit down with our clients and we help them to file a proper tax return. We do it all electronically. We give them a copy for their own records. And last year we brought in $4.38 million in refunds to the county. Of that $4.38 million, more than $2.5 million was what we call refundable credits, meaning that this was new money that was brought into the families, money that they're going to spend here in Tompkins County for local businesses. So we're not only helping the individual families, we're helping the community. One final thing I wanted to say was we serve like 90% of the people that we see at the credit union downtown Ithaca, but we also have sites that we have throughout the county. This year we expanded to a couple sites in Danby. We've been serving the Dryden for at least 5 years. We are in Groton. We work at the Brooktondale Market, or actually the Brooktondale Community Center, and one more. Who have I not mentioned? Okay. So I just wanted to say thank you very much for your support for our program.
Thank you. Vonnie Dawson.
Hi. I didn't hear from anybody about my letter, and then I mailed another one. I still didn't hear anything from anybody. Former Big Say employee. Is that with the is there a chance that you're going to talk about that in executive session tonight?
I can only say to you that you should be getting a response from us.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't have TV and I don't have internet and I don't have any of that, but I do have a phone that has a little bit of data on it where I can get on the internet for a little bit. It's kind of slow, but I see that there's a piece of property where the Big Zay building used to be, and it's for sale. And every time something happens in the news with the Big Zay building, it seems to really upset me. And I think with good cause, because I got sick and my kids suffered. I suffered. I lost my husband. I lost my house. I lost everything. And the county just seems to go on like nothing ever happened to any of us. And every day I'm in pain. And I go to doctors. I go to a neurologist. I went and got a treatment on Wednesday. And from the treatment, I was sick in bed until Sunday. If anybody was on this board years ago when I got sick, you'll remember me coming to the board with lesions on my back from working in that building. Now I've got them all over my body. The pain is terrible. I cannot afford the medications my doctors are prescribing for me. Medicaid won't cover them. I do have Medicaid through the county. If I get any other income from any other source, like spousal support or anything, I lose my medical coverage. That's really not fair to me to keep me on an $830 a month budget when I live alone in a house and try to keep the house up. And it's really not fair to me to be in pain like this all the time. And I'm alone. I'm isolated. I can't be with family and friends without getting sick. And it just isn't fair. And I'm out of time on that right now, but I want you all to consider what happened in that Big Zay building when you're selling this piece of property, and consider the lives that were messed up because of that building. And I was under the understanding the hospital bought that building before it was tore down. I'm wondering why we still own the property. It's a good question, and nobody's answered that. I've got 53 seconds left. I'd just like to say the little girl that was in my home and removed by Tompkins County CPS, her grandmother's scheduled to be in court on Wednesday, tomorrow morning. And CPS has had all these months to do a home visit of that grandmother, and they have failed to do that as the judge ordered. And there are people in Washington right now, and there's a million parent march going to happen in September in Washington with all these people that have lost their kids to CPS. And the county CPSs are not following federal law when taking these kids. And I still am very concerned about this, and I'm still willing to help out with this issue if anybody would like my help or would like to talk to me about it. You can look me up on Vonnie Dawson under Facebook. There's tons of people on there fighting CPS, attorneys, and doctors, everybody. Feel free to look me up under Vonnie Dawson. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Faye Gugakis.
I'm just wondering if I could sit down.
You can sit at the front of the room.
I need to sit down.
Faye, ahead of the meeting, you asked me, and I granted you an additional minute. So you'll hear the bell, but you can continue for another minute.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Faye Gugakis, and I reside in the city of Ithaca. I've been in Ithaca since 1982. I want to thank you, Mike, for the extra time. I had to sit down today because I don't feel that I live in Ithaca anymore. I feel that I live in a community that doesn't care. I feel in a community where the crime is going up, and I'm afraid as a woman to be out and about. In this week's Ithaca Times, on page 6, there is a guest column said the commons needs to be safer. I have come before you, and I have come before the city of Ithaca many times talking about how the crime is going up in our community, and it is going up. When I've talked to the chief that just retired and the previous chief and the chief before that, it was always the journals upping the crime rate. We are not increasing in crime. But in fact, we are. It was in the Ithaca Journal this Saturday. And the mayor's reaction was deplorable. And I say that not because he's a person of color, because I don't feel his leadership is good in terms of leading our community. So I'm coming before you because we are dealing with a crossroads in our community where we have to stop and think about where we're going. We talk about sustainability, okay? Are we doing that? I needed to say one more thing before I went on to that. Today I took a bus to Trip Hammer Mall, and as I was coming back from the bus, a woman almost killed me. And I'm still in shock about that because I screamed and said, please stop. And she screamed back at me saying, it's your fault because you stepped back and I saw you and I would have went ahead. And I was terrified because she would have killed me had I not paid attention because I didn't see anybody coming my way as I was crossing, and that was my right of way. When I crossed the street to the bus stop, the people that were stopped at the light had no emotion. And I said to the woman in her car, I said, does that not bother you that I almost got killed? The reason I say this story is because that's what's happening in our society everywhere. People are looking in their cell phones all the time and not paying attention to the environment, to the people around them. They're on Facebook. They're on the internet all the time. We have lost our humanity, and I mean that with all my heart because I'm experiencing it, which is why I requested the extra minute, because Green Star, the store that is supposed to be diverse, the store that's supposed to be for sustainability, the store that's supposed to care about people, has banned me until further notice because I was caring about the bicycle racks, which the Lori, who's the manager of Oasis, said to me, it is not my problem, 2 months ago. I called the Downing Associates. I talked to the police. I went to the city bicycle committee who was supposed to call her, and I don't even know if anybody did. I've exhausted my time, and Green Star keeps saying I'm wasting their time and has now banned me from all stores. So to gag rule me so I don't talk to another person. Yes, yes, your expression is like I'm lying or that's like this is impossible. It is possible. And I'm sorry to say, but if I was a person of color, there'd be thousands of people protesting in front of Green Star. But I'm not, because Faye already has called several lawyers who can't represent me, which has been the case for almost 30 years. I've been banned from other stores. I've been treated badly by a lot of people in this community, and nobody ever wants to represent me except Alan Cohen. That's when Ray Schlatter represented me. And I was found not guilty because I was talking about drug houses and defending people from the second ward, which wasn't even my ward. So basically, I'm getting in trouble for caring. So I'm pleading with you, please, if there's any lawyer out there who could represent me, I am appalled about what this community has become. So I'm alerting you to that because my heart is broken and I'm devastated. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That's the last blue card I had. We have municipal officials tonight. Ah, yes, George is here. George McGonigal, city councilman. From the only city we have.
Good evening, everyone. I'm unprepared. I don't have anything to say about what's going on in the city other than we're about to vote on the new zoning proposals for the waterfront district tomorrow. That will have major consequences on how the West End develops. Other than that, I'll take your requests.
Anna has a question.
Thank you. I saw that on the agenda, so I was very curious. Is there a plan that has been put forward that you will be voting on, or multiple different plans, or where does it stand right now? You guys are talking about it. It's an information only. You're voting, correct?
Well, there's been a special committee since last fall studying what we want to see happen. And so, yes, there's definite rezoning proposals. There's basically, we've broken up the West End / waterfront into four districts. Cherry Street, which is what you would expect it to be, which is now entirely an industrial zone. The West End waterfront, which includes Inlet Island and the land west of the railroad tracks. The Newman Zone, which is up by the golf course and north of Cascadilla Creek. And the Market District, which includes the Farmers Market, Carpenter Business Park, and potentially the New York State DOT property.
So the proposal that you're going to be voting on has specific code that has been proposed for all four districts?
That is correct. And each district is a little different.
Curiosity, the zone that is going to include Carpenter Business Park, I know that there was discussion at some point about potential inclusionary zoning, active first floor, very specific designs. Is any of that included right now in that the zoning of that neighborhood?
The proposals from Forum Ithaca, some are incorporated into that. Mm-hmm. I think the first floor stuff you talked about is part of that. So, yes, but not. It's not completely the Forum Ithaca mm-hmm. version of what of that.
So, just last quick question: is there a link? I didn't see in the agenda a link to that proposal. I might be wrong, but I didn't see it incorporated into the actual agenda. Is there a place where we can find the proposal to read it that has the outline of the code, or a way that you could get that to us?
Yes, there is, and the way to get that is to call Doug Center because I'm not as good at the computer stuff as he is. But yet, all that stuff's online.
Thank you.
Other questions? Jim Dennis.
No questions.
Martha Robertson.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
We have an appointment tonight for Pete Tyler, for the police chief. So I was wondering, is there a timeline for an appointment? I can't remember because he's still acting, right?
Yes, he's still acting. And he's a candidate for the permanent position.
So do you know if there's a timeline for an appointment?
I don't know of any specific timeline, but there's a committee working on it right now.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Anyone else? George, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Am I missing any other municipal officials? Guess not. Let's turn to privilege of the floor for legislators. Now I have Jim Dennis.
Mike, concerning this Vani, I'm sorry, I saw an email that you sent out to all of us in a reply to her letter, and I heard her say that the Internet was not available to her. Is there a way that we could produce a hard copy and hand to her of that email so she would know what your response was?
I just checked with our clerk, and it was U.S. mail to her.
Okay, good enough. Thank you very much.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. Well, this year we are celebrating the 200th anniversary of the founding of Tompkins County. But there's another 200th anniversary that I'd like to lift up tonight, and it is what is believed to be the
first ever bicycle that was invented 200 years ago in Germany, and it became something that you know, took over the world. It was looked sort of like a bike. It was made completely of wood. It had wooden wheels, wooden frame, wooden spokes. Everything was wood. The way you sat on it and you sort of moved yourself up and pushed yourself forward with your feet on the ground. There were better bikes to come. 1890s, bikes became huge. They were literally one of the world's first big fads. And there were bicycling groups of like thousands of people going out out of New York City. And it was a liberatory thing because for suddenly women could get on a bicycle that fit with clothing that they could wear appropriately on a bike, and they were free to move about. History continues. Bikes are a huge part of the force. This fad led to a demand for smooth roads, and so you had macadamized roads. You had the invention of the pneumatic tire, which was done not for cars but for bicycles. You had the invention eventually of chain drive, which of course became huge. Wright brothers, they didn't start as airplane mechanics. They were bicycle mechanics. I could go on and on and bore you to death. But I do want to think of this wonderful machine. It's incredibly efficient. And I've been biking most of my life. And I really appreciated some of what Faye was talking about, reminding us that bicyclists and pedestrians are always at a disadvantage in our society. And that there's much we could do to be making cycling and pedestrian walking safer. About a month ago, or in June, we heard I was at the meeting of the Health Planning Council and heard a very good presentation talking about what other communities have done to encourage cycling and make it safer. And they compared Ithaca with Burlington, Vermont, and the number of people who are using bicycles to get to work. And in 2000, the year 2000, it was roughly equal. We were pretty much 1 or 2%. Burlington, in the 17 years, has quadrupled that. It's something like 6% of the folks in Burlington are getting to work by bicycle. If you've ever been there, you know it's a university community on a hillside overlooking a lake in a cold, inhospitable climate, but they are succeeding in ways that we haven't. So there's much to be done. I'm almost done, Mike, but I could not finish by saying that once again we're going to be having a wonderful local event, which is the AIDS Ride for Life. It is happening on September 9th, and I've done it twice. I've decided this is going to be my third year. I'm going to do it. And if anybody out there would like to do it with me or wants to know about it, I'm in the phone book, and I would love to talk with you. It's a wonderful event. The first time I did it, basically it was riding around the lake for 100 miles in one day. That's a pretty big deal. They now have many different levels. You could ride 20 miles or whatever if you'd like. And so it's a wonderful event for the community, and I encourage everybody to pay attention to people who will be looking for support to raise money for the Southern Tier AIDS program, which I visited today and talked with them, and they are just doing incredibly good work beyond AIDS, but harm reduction in terms of needle exchange and the opioid crisis. So, AIDS Ride for Life, September 9th. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Rich John.
Will, I agree with you. The Ride for Life is a great event. If anybody has an interest in doing it, it really is worth doing the training and going out and riding. It's wonderfully supported and a very worthy cause. I was going to talk about another worthy cause. I had a chance to go to the Just Because fundraiser and party on Sunday, and each year the focus of the party is on a particular local charity. Last year they recognized Gadabout, And this Sunday, they recognized the village at Ithaca for their good work. And they had several of the kids who get the help from the village at Ithaca get up and talk about their experiences. It was very moving and a very nice recognition. I had one other comment of a more political nature, because I was recognizing the calendar. And at the end of January, our national government instituted a travel ban and said it was vital and urgent, and they wanted a 90-day ban and a 120-day ban for another group. And, of course, this went through the courts. But I just recognize it's been 6 months, and it doesn't seem like anything has happened. If this was totally urgent, we should have been hearing about it, and it seems to be totally inactive. I'd like to know why there doesn't seem to be any further step. Anyway.
Thank you, Rich. Anna Kellis.
So I had three things I want to bring up today. One, just an appreciation for everyone who came out to Grassroots. I volunteer every year, tons of music and fun and food, and it's one of the most diverse gatherings that I experience every year in the community, and I take off every year so that I can volunteer. Interestingly, I was on security this year, which was a trip. But I did want to remind everybody that two things. One, it does use a significant amount of the proceeds for fundraising for organizations locally, and that is something not to forget. And that it also supports a significant amount of staff full-time throughout the year. So it's an experience to be had, but it's also something to support. So I just wanted to say that it was another huge success, despite being washed out on Thursday and washed out on Sunday. It began and ended with a flood, which was quite interesting. The other thing that I did want to bring up, I've been reading on Facebook people mentioning, should I go in the lake, should I not go in the lake, what's this whole thing, what's going on with the lake, is it toxic, is it not toxic? I have posted on my Facebook page, I know other people have, the DEC website has listed officially Cayuga Lake, widespread, identified toxic algal bloom. So I do encourage people to avoid long-term exposure to the lake. Most specifically, people may not feel any ramifications short-term, but the impact is specifically to liver damage. So that's just something to keep in mind. It's particularly toxic to pets. There have been several pets that have died. And then keep all the wildlife in our prayers, because it actually kills wildlife as well. So every time I see the ducks swimming around, it's a little heartbreaking. So keep shooing them away, and please don't feed them right now, because the greatest amount of algal bloom appearances have been closer to the shore. And the last, actually, I'm going to do another plug of an event, a fundraiser, which is Women Swimmin', and that happens every year, and that is before our next legislative session, and that is Saturday, August 12th, to swim across the lake. So, unfortunately, I'm not sure what the status is right now. I'm trying to find that out. But what's more important is that this is a huge fundraiser for HospiCare. That is one of the only organizations that supports the end-of-life process and people with terminal conditions, chronic extreme conditions. And all of the money that's fundraised, and typically every year it's about $400,000, all of that money goes directly to care. It does not go to administrative costs. And that is really important. So anyone who needs care from them, irregardless of their ability to pay, is supported. And to be able to go through that last phase of life with grace and support and love, regardless of what your situation is maybe one of the most important things and gifts that we can give people. So I'm swimming or not. I'm still fundraising. So I'm just letting everybody know that that's happening. Thank you.
Thanks. So, Leslie Mabine Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always appreciate when Faye comes and talks about just the humanness of our community. I hear at City Council, and just here. It seems like sometimes the summer, and it's not just the summer, but a lot of times when the summer hits, people forget common courtesies. My big fear often, and I love motorcycles, it's just these motorcycles that are invading and in our community and just going at top speed and not paying any attention. So often I have to get out of the way. So hopefully our community continue to speak about it, or we continue to at least approach people and encourage them to be mindful that as much as possible we are encouraging a walking community, and we want all of us to be able to share the road safely. So thank you for reminding us of the common courtesies that make us a community that cares. I want to give kudos to the clerk's office, because tomorrow another naturalization ceremony will occur. I cannot remember what number this is, but I know they've been doing it for a number of years. 21 candidates from 20 countries will be sworn in as citizens of the United States of America. Means a lot to me, a lot to me as a naturalized citizen. I remember my day in 1995, and I was sworn in as a citizen of the United States, and so I'm looking forward. I think Anna and I are both playing roles in it tomorrow. Thank you, Martha. It's funny because I was sworn in 1995, not here, but in Buffalo. I had to go all the way to Buffalo. I don't know why they sent me here. They sent me to Buffalo. And that very year, I had the privilege of speaking at the event here. So it's always very moving. So if you have some time, do stop by tomorrow at the courthouse. 1:30 is when the ceremony begins. It's good to have people welcoming our newest citizens. Some of them might have lived here for a while, but to have the privilege of being able to participate in, I call it a privilege, in the democracy of the United States of America is extremely special. So if you have time, do stop by and see the ceremony and welcome those citizens to our great country and our great community. Thank you.
Carol Chalk.
Thanks, Mike. It's a real trigger for me to hear anybody's account of a car headed towards them and not being able to get out of the way. So, I do agree that and believe that the sense of humanity and empathy among people from everything we hear around the country is at a lifetime low for me. And it's very scary, and anything we can all do to counteract that, I really believe in. And drive carefully, because it's so easy to be distracted long enough to hit somebody and change their life forever. Speaking of caring, I would encourage people to give to their favorite organizations. We have many, many wonderful organizations in town, and regardless of whether people you know are exercising or not, you don't need to wait for those moments to give to support all of the wonderful organizations, whether it's time or money or other in-kind kinds of ways of supporting our organizations. I encourage people to do that. And then I just want to request that we get this issue of the lake, and not just in committee. I would like, Mike, if we could, to know that we could request reports on the algae in the lake and get updates on that as time goes by. I've read some conflicting things about whether the likelihood of a bloom, a toxic bloom like the one we're experiencing now in Cayuga Lake, potentially being short-lived and dying out, or lingering and lasting or repeating. So it would be good for us to know that status as time goes on. It would be good for us to know the status now, whether it's totally unsafe to be swimming or not swimming. I've read conflicting things about that. And then in a couple of weeks, again, where we stand, or a month. It would be good to get updates if that's possible.
I know we all got an advisory from the health department yesterday. Joe, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, just that. And Anna talked about the DEC being a source, but that, so is our own webpage. So you can get updates on our own webpage. You can link from the front page right over to the health department. They've been really good about providing not only basic information about it, but updates as they occur.
Yeah, well, I was looking for something more like with the opportunity for legislators to ask questions and, you know, follow the issue as time goes on.
I'm sure we can
figure
out how to do that, sure.
Mike Sigler?
I'll be quick. I just touching on the HABs that are being found in the lake, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Frank Krupa. I mean, I called him over the weekend. He calls me, you know, after the movie is done. And he was really kind of Johnny on the spot with that. Like, even I didn't even call him, and he's calling me, like, because we had a big SUP event down in Lansing this weekend. And he was already in touch with those people, said, you know, keep an eye out for this, and was really just on top of things. So I wanted to thank him and the health department for all their hard work on that.
I'm looking at the website. It's extensive, so thank you. Sorry I missed it.
Jim, I'll come back to you. We had you once, so I'll come back for a second time. Martha?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to a couple of things that in the context of where I've been for the last two meetings, your bike comments, Will, made me think of it. My grandchildren and my son and his wife live in Bend, Oregon, so it's a long schlep to go visit them, so that's where we were. And it's a community a bit bigger than ours, but very, very bike friendly, and we got around on bikes almost the entire time. And it's so good for kids to be able to just get around, go to the library every other day on a bike and all the rest of it. And they have a lot of bike lanes. I mean, they really have, it's almost everywhere you needed to go on a main road, there was a dedicated bike lane. It really makes a difference. And tons of bike racks everywhere. And people really use them. So, but it's also in the high desert and very dry, but very hot and very, 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 very sunny. And I got back and was delighted with the rain. So I know you can have too much of a good thing, I know, but you know, to have water just come out of the sky is a great thing. So it's good to be home.
Jim.
Thanks, Mike. I was on the lake today, and from Ithaca above to Kanak, and there are floating little, it looks like an oil slick in certain places on the lake. And the New York State people at Taconic were advising not to swim even in the lake, let alone at their beaches. And people at this end of the lake who operate marine establishments were just kind of casually saying, you know, don't go swimming in the lake for a while. So, and I think DEC is actually doing a good job monitoring, and you can hit their website and find out all you need to know.
Will?
So another question that I have yet to find an answer, maybe somebody else has. A number of people get their water from the lake, both cottages along the lake, but the Bolton Point serves whole communities. And from what I've read, they're saying not to drink the water from the lake. Unless it's public water, which would be through the public systems.
But people are filtering. If they're drawing directly out of the lake, then they should check their filters and make sure they're operating 100% capacity.
Good tip.
But they're advising at this point not to drink the
water. Use your microphone, Jim.
Don't drink the water out of the lake.
Okay.
Thank you.
I wanted to speak on Privilege of the Floor for just a minute. our college every summer has what it calls the Global Connection Program, in which students from different colleges, normally out a large portion from the Dominican Republic and some of the other South American and Latin American countries, come for two summers and are immersed in English here, and they take business courses and other things. They're wonderful. We probably have over 100 that come each summer. And after 2 years, they end up with a degree from Tompkins-Cortland Community College and their home university or college where they're from. Normally, it's a happy time for them up here. They're wonderful young people. They'll have the global commencement, I believe, this week up there. Sadly, this year there is a pall over the what should be normally a time about life and graduations and celebrations and things. And that is one of the young people in the program was killed along with the driver of a taxi in Cortland County. His name was Roberto Lopez, and he was very well liked and loved among his classmates. There was apparently a taxi that was, according to news reports, out of Cortland County that was supposed to have 8 passengers in it. It had 9. It failed to negotiate a curve and crashed into a pole. And as I said, the driver and the young man were killed. A number of the students were also seriously injured. Some of them are still in upstate hospital. Most of them have been returned back. This driver apparently was not licensed to operate a cab in the city of Cortland and had been denied a license up there. This according to the news reports. Last week, there was a memorial service for Roberto Lopez at the college. I was pleased to attend on behalf of all of us in Tompkins County and hear the very touching, moving ceremonies, the music, the speeches in both English and Spanish. And I just think it's important that we remember this young man as a symbol of all the things that are good about our connection between our college and all of the world. And for just a second, could we have a moment of silence for Roberto Lopez? Thank you. Anyone else have privilege of the floor? Then I guess we go right to the chair's report. I have some happier things to talk about that were happening last week. And there, as we know, we've talked about grassroots. We've talked about all the celebrations going on. Friday night at 4-H Acres was the annual 4-H Fair. And if you've never gone to that, I hope that you'll take advantage of it in one of the years in the future to go out there and see the displays of the animals that the young people take care of and raise. Cows, pigs, rabbits, sheep. And they know about them. They're educated about them, and they show them. And not only that, but displays about botanical things, about cooking and crafts and writing and so many things that these young people in 4-H do. And it's amazing to me to spend an hour or so out there. And the young people gave me a tour, took me around to see it. And this is an important thing that we help sponsor through our cooperative extension. So I just wanted to tell about that. The next morning, as David invited us to Newfield for Old Home Day. I was pleased to be out there with you, Dave, and so many people from Tompkins County, our county administrator, many staff people. Marsha Lynch had put it all together for us to be out there. The airport was there, the highway department, our giant birthday cake for our 200th anniversary was there. It was a great time that we marched down through there, and the weather was perfect this year, Dave. Thank you for making sure that was the way it was.
Sorry to say I had nothing to do with the weather.
Well, we blamed you for the rain last year, so you get credit for the sun this year. And then one more thing I need to tell you about for the bicentennial, and that was that last Thursday, on pretty short notice, we got invited to go to the town of Covert, which for a short time was a part of Tompkins County. And it was established the same year our county was, and it had its 200th birthday celebration on Saturday in the afternoon in Interlaken at the Fireman's Field up there. Thanks to Kathy Covert, we were able to put together a proclamation, and I took it up with me, and we read it and heard from the town and village historians talk about the history of Covert, and saw some displays, including a Masonic rededication of a cornerstone that had been the cornerstone of the original Union School building that had been built in 1900. It's unusual, something you don't see very often happen. And they were very, very grateful. And on the way back, I was able to stop at the Covert Town Hall to see the historic marker that we gifted to them as part of our bicentennial. It's prominently displayed in the front of their town hall, right next to their wonderful war memorial area, which has multiple flagpoles of all the flags of the different armed forces services, and bricks with veterans' names on them, and in a plaza area there. So when you're driving up Route 96, stop for a minute at the town hall. It's right there on the right side of the road as you're going into Interlaken, and take a second and look at the marker and look at how nice it looks up there. So I guess I've talked long enough. I have a few appointments. Actually, there are committees I want to talk about. I want to announce the committees that are doing the white-collar and blue-collar negotiations for us. For white-collar, the legislative participants are Jim Dennis, Peter Stein, and Glenn Morey. Out of the county group, it's Joe Mariana, Amy Guerrari, Paula Younger, Frank Krupa, and Amy Hendricks. For the blue-collar, the legislative are Jim Dennis and Dan Klein. And for the county, it's Joe Mariana, Amy Guerrari, Paula Younger, and Jeff Smith. I also told you that I would be announcing the... before I do that, I wanted to mention to folks that there is a blood drive sponsored by county employees, and that will be on August 3rd at the Borg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library. And the announcement I have says they're looking for folks to volunteer to donate blood, to work the drive for an hour, or to work the drive at the canteen table, for example. So if you're interested in doing that, you should make contact. I do have one appointment to the Workforce Development Board. Dr. Orinthia Montague, she's the mandated partner from the higher education area. And as soon as I find it, I have a list of folks who I am appointing to the County Administrator Search Committee. And I told you I would do this. I told you I won't make everybody happy. Dan Klein, and I want to thank you for helping us work through this list. One thing we're doing is having more legislators on the search committee than may have been in the past, but I can't have you all. The administrator, or rather the legislators on the committee will be Jim Dennis chairing it, Dan Klein, myself, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Glenn Morey, and Martha Robertson. And from community and county employees and staff, we have James Brown, Pat Buchel, Lisa Holmes, Doug Perrine, Kathy Slaughter, Michael Stamm, and Gary Stewart. And we, the Human Resources Department, I got to get that down from personnel. The Human Resources Department has already begun advertising. In fact, I think we're already starting to get applications, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll be arranging a first meeting of the search committee very soon. And thank you for folks who are willing to serve on that.
Mike, can we get an email or a list with everyone?
I will email that out to everyone tonight.
Thanks.
Any questions I can answer? Let's go to reports. Start with our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
From the lame duck, just a couple of items that aren't new, just updates. It's that time of year. We are immersed in the budget right now. The departments have done their work and prepared their requests. So at this point, Kevin, Paula, and I have been sitting down meeting with all the departments to understand what's in the request, pouring through the numbers, trying to bring some order to about 90 OTRs that have been presented, many of which would be funded with one-time money, some of which would hit the levy. So we're at that point of the year when if we look a little tired and act a little cranky, you know why, because it is really at the peak time of the budget season. I have encouraged departments. Some anticipated some of the recommendations coming out of the CGR report. Others didn't have time to incorporate some of the recommendations in their budget requests. I've encouraged them. If they see things that look like they may relate to them, they may want to think about putting an OTR in for you to consider that as a part of the 2018 budget. So you should expect to see some of those things as a part of the package that will come to you a month from now. So early September is when we present our budget to you. Beyond the budget there, you know, are a couple of active department head searches underway. The DSS commissioner search is now in the interview stage. We finished the first round of interviews today. We will go to finalist interviews toward the end of the month, and hopefully soon after that we'll have a recommendation about a successor to Patricia Carey. The other one is the planning and sustainability commissioner position. That is still posted, although the posting ends this Friday. So that will soon turn the corner and head toward the interview stage as well. Search committees are in place for both of those. The last thing that I would add, and this is old news as well, but the law enforcement shared services study. At the last meeting we talked about that there will be public presentations of the options that are emerging from that study. It looks like now those will be scheduled in the week of August 21st and August 28th. We're not date certain yet. I expect that we will be by the end of this week. So as soon as we hear when those dates are, we will let the legislature and everyone else know. And that's my report.
Questions for Joe? Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Let's go to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
Just one personnel matter I wanted to update the legislature on, because a request for funds from contingency fund is going to GEO tomorrow and then to budget and then here. But after more than 30 years, I'm not sure exactly how many, close to 35, Susie Cook retired and has been hired back half-time. We'll see how that works through this year when we have to raise the age issue that could significantly affect our work or not. We'll see. So I'm not sure how long that current arrangement will last, but at the moment that works well. That's my report.
Questions?
John, I missed something. Say how long it works. Raise the what issue? Well,
when they raise the age of who's going to be a juvenile.
I'm sorry. Okay, I understand.
And that will give us more work, and Susie does a lot of the juvenile work.
Got it. Okay.
How much, you don't yet know.
I understand. Thank you.
Other questions for Jonathan? Thank you, John. Rick Snyder, our finance director, told us at the last meeting that he would not be here tonight. Is there any kind of report out of his office we should be aware of?
No.
Okay. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Seeing none, we'll go to the consent agenda. We had some advisory board appointments. The Public Safety Committee has to the Stop DWI Advisory Board Kristen Bennett, and to the Emergency Communication Review and Oversight Committee, Peter Tyler. And there's some resolutions. If you want them off, just say so. Resolution A, approval of amended bylaws, Stop DWI Advisory Board. That's ID 7168. Resolution B, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number E of 2017, a local law repealing and replacing local law number 9 of 2002 and imposing wireless communication surcharges. That's ID 7151. Out of Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution C, budget adjustment for revenue increase for the Alzheimer's Association Respite Grant. That's ID 7172. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? By Glenn, seconded by Martha. Those in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. That takes us to standing committees. Old Library Committee. We have a meeting date.
August 16th at
3:30. We'll have an update from Travis Hyde on the project as approved by the city. And we will be considering resolutions to move that sale forward. Questions? Carol?
So are there is there some place we can go to see the plans? Are there any new materials he's submitting to us?
That'll
come out with the agenda.
Yeah, I don't. If there is any, we can ask if there's anything they want us to see ahead of time, but I'm not aware of anything at this point. Joe, have you heard of anything?
No, but I know there were materials submitted to the city as a part of its site plan review, so I'll see if that's out there, and if not, I'll see what I can.
So
maybe they could leave a set here at the office so folks could look at it?
Rather than the whole long thing, maybe a summary of what the program now is and a few pictures, whatever. I assume the committee will go through the extent to which it matches with what our expectations were.
Okay.
Right. Will help us do that.
What time is the committee meeting? I didn't catch it.
3:30 in the afternoon. That'll be here in chambers.
What day again? Sorry.
16.
August 16. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure. I haven't got it right in front of me here. Okay. Unless there's anything else, let's go to Public Safety Committee. Rich John is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. The committee met on July 20th and had a very full agenda. We had several reports and took a few actions. I just wanted to mention briefly, we had a report from the Healthy Youth on their survey of teenage drug and alcohol use, and there was some very interesting data in there. One of the key takeaways for me was it does appear that teenagers do listen to their parents in some measure, that it is worth telling them to behave, and sometimes it works. We also had a report and a resolution from the Stop DWI Advisory Board and reviewed some statistics on DWI in our community, and we've just passed their amended bylaws, so they've been working on different efforts there. The Department of Emergency Response, just to let you know what's coming, I went to the last ECROC meeting, which is the Emergency Communication Review and Oversight Committee. They are going to change their name to the Unified Review and Oversight Committee. And if you notice, that acronym is UROC. And I told them I think they've got probably the best acronym going in the county right now. But they've looked very thoroughly at their overall operations and how they want to structure the joint communication and response issues between the fire departments, ambulance, and police agencies. So it's really good what they're doing. And that will be coming to public safety and then to the legislature. We had a report from assigned counsel, and then the sheriff's office and the jail. And at the last count, we were boarding out a few prisoners, which is unfortunate, but overall, we've been keeping our numbers at a fairly low number. So, any questions?
Julie Kiefer.
Do you have on your agenda at any point consideration of asset forfeiture practices?
We don't have anything scheduled, but we certainly could look at that if you had anything in particular you wanted us to consider.
I find it a troubling practice in general, and I don't know that we do a better job of resisting temptation to take money and properties than any other department. Nationwide, it's a problem. I don't mean to single us out, but I would like to know what our practice is.
Certainly, I'd agree with you nationwide and in some particular communities where it's relied on as a real fundraising, revenue-generating activity. We can certainly look at it here.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Martha Robertson?
Yeah, I assume, Bill, you were thinking of the Attorney General's call to more aggressively empower state law enforcement agencies to seize property of suspects, not convicted criminals, but people who are not even maybe formally charged yet, and that seems completely unconstitutional. The other thing I was thinking about was the jail variance issue, but then I thought, well, maybe that'll go under the jail study report, but yes. I'm sure. Okay.
Rich, I was going to ask a question on the board outs. Do we continue to board out women?
Well, it's both, but I think lately it's worked out that it's been more women than men.
I was afraid of that. Thank you. Carol?
Yeah, I received a letter. It took a little while to wend its way to me. I guess it must have showed up in my box just before I went out of town for a couple of weeks, asking about and weighing in on the ways in which the bail system disproportionately affects community members with low incomes and people who are there if they're subject to pretrial detention in much greater numbers. Underlined, the continuing the present system means we are incarcerating people because they are poor, and urging us to look at a system that New Jersey uses, a risk assessment tool that eliminates such cases from money bail. I don't know how much, leeway we have to look at this kind of thing here, but I will pass this along to you, or maybe make copies. I'll leave it for Kathy, and maybe ask copies to go to everybody, because people should all see this letter. It's from Ruth Yarrow.
I think most of us got that letter.
Okay. Well, then, if you got it, I will give this to Rick.
Thank you, Carol. And I just comment that obviously the legislature doesn't get involved in setting bail, and we're somewhat limited in setting bail policy because that's the province of the local courts. And we also don't control the police agencies that make the arrest decisions that lead to bail. So we have to work in conjunction with those departments and agencies. I would say that one of the outcomes of the jail, or one of the recommendations of the jail study, if I can jump ahead slightly, is trying to look at ways we can reduce the use of bail and instead have release on one's own recognizance, meaning you just get an appearance ticket and come back to court, or release under supervision of the probation department, or a court can order use of day reporting at the probation department where they have to show up each day. So there are alternatives, and we certainly want to encourage those. And one of the findings of the jail study was that there is a fair number of people that are getting very low bail, you know, under $500 and under $1,000. And some of those people are staying in jail for a significant period of time because they just don't have that amount of money. And that's one area where we definitely are going to be looking to make sure that we can try to reduce people staying in jail at those very low bail numbers.
Okay. Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Anna Kellis is the chair.
So we haven't met since the last legislative meeting, so I don't have a report. But I wanted to add that the report on a previous meeting. I wanted to report that I have connected with the Department of Youth Services, and we will have a similar presentation from Healthy Youth. If anybody missed that presentation and would like to see that, they'll be reporting out as well. I also wanted to note that the next Health and Human Services Committee meeting would be on August 21st at 4:30 p.m., which I admit is a bit heartbreaking for me and probably a lot of people because it is a lifetime experience of a full solar eclipse, that exact time that we'll be sitting at the chambers. I'm sorry for anyone who will be missing it, but we will be covering some very important material. So hopefully, if you can't go to see the eclipse down south, you'll come to our meeting instead. We'll try and keep it equally entertaining and interesting and educational.
Questions? Thank you, Anna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is chair.
F&I has not met. We will be meeting on Tuesday, next Tuesday, in these chambers at 3 o'clock. That's my report.
Questions? Dave, you know if they're planning a ribbon cutting for the Red Mill Road Bridge?
I haven't heard anything yet. There ought to be.
If it happens, I'd like to know about it.
In the cake.
I'll let you know.
Thank you. Transportation Committee, we did meet. We had a very interesting meeting. Spent most of our time talking about ride-hailing services. We had folks who came in and spoke to us on both sides of the issue. Again, I'm privileged of the floor. We had some folks that drive taxis that would like very much to have us opt out, or people that have taxi companies. We had other people who came and talked about the benefits of having services like Lyft and Uber. We also had some representatives that came and requested to make a presentation to us, and they are from the Lyft company. The Lyft company had negotiated a contract airport to deliver passengers there, as is required by the state legislation that was passed. At that time, there was negotiations going on with Uber. They're the only two companies that apparently have been licensed statewide. But I don't think that's come to fruition, Joe, has it? They haven't come to an agreement yet?
No, there has been contact, and there was a commitment made to provide us with the first proposal this week, so there is progress on that front.
So I think both of those companies are currently operating in Tompkins County. Actually, the thing that was most surprising to me was some information that the Lyft representative talked about that was different than what we had understood, I think, from the NYSEC releases that we were looking at, having to do with which counties could opt out of the service. We thought we were, because we were over 100,000 in population, we were one of the only counties that could do that in this region. He said, no, that's not the case, that any county can opt out. And he talked to us about the placement of a comma in the legislation, legal ease, that said that any counties and cities over 100,000 in population could opt out. But he said he was there for the markup of the bill, apparently, at the legislature, and said they inserted a comma that says any counties and cities over 100,000. So we started down the path of looking at it, thinking we were kind of alone in this review, but maybe we aren't, but maybe we still are, because I don't think any of the other counties in the region, other than possibly the larger counties, are taking any look at the issue of this service. Peter Stein brought to us a proposed resolution to opt out and to establish a committee to review this. It did not pass the committee. What have I missed, Peter or Jim? Have I kind of covered what we talked about?
No, I think you have, Mike. My only comment would be, had Dooley Kiefer been in the state legislature, that comma never would have gotten misplaced.
I guess it's part of when they say you don't want to, it's like sausage, you don't want to be there when they're making it.
Yeah, well, someone had said that once.
Can I answer any questions? Thank you. Let's go to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you. The Government Operations Committee, GO, which is also a pretty good acronym, will be meeting tomorrow, Wednesday, August 2nd, at 3:30 in these chambers. Two of the bigger items that we'll be discussing are the blue cards, the way that people identify themselves and the rules people are agreeing to if they speak at these meetings in public. So we'll be discussing whether people have the option to be anonymous in that form, and if so, how we'll accomplish that. And then the other item has to do with the shared services agreement that Joe has been working on with the town supervisors and the mayors in the county. So we are going to vote to endorse or accept, endorse the plan, and then pass it on to the further along in the process.
I assume you mean you're going to discuss whether or not to endorse the plan.
We are going to vote whether to endorse the plan.
Thank you. So. Questions for Dan. Martha Roberts.
So the discussion of the blue cards, last time they were revised, that was done in committee, and the full legislature didn't discuss or vote or anything. Is that the plan again?
If I have my way, it will be given to the full legislature after we vote on it. I would recommend that it goes to the full legislature.
So is that something the committee will decide or whatever? Or?
That would be my understanding, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Jim?
And I believe I sent a copy of the rules of the Common Council to every member of the legislature, and they seem to be a good set of rules, I think, and they learn from experience, and I would hope that we would adopt something close to that in the committee, and I also would agree that with you that I hope it gets to the legislature to talk about. I don't think it's a critical issue at all, but, you know, please bring it.
Other questions of Dan? Thank you, Dan. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is chair.
Thank you, Mike. I want to thank Dooley for making the report at the last two meetings ago, and and thank all of you for approving the housing strategy. Wish I'd been here. But the committee meets this Thursday at 3:30, and make sure that's 3 o'clock. This Thursday at 3 o'clock with a number of resolutions from the Planning Department. In addition, in your boxes, committee members, you've just gotten a hard copy of a presentation called True Cost of Housing. True Cost Tompkins, Way to Go did a study on if you look at the transportation costs related to where people live, and the idea that if you're housing, if you move farther out from the center of the county for cheaper housing, but you factor in your cost of transportation, you're in many cases paying more for the total. So that's one of the issues certainly that came up at the housing summit. That's going to be, we're going to get the presentation on Thursday and a chance to discuss it. I think it's a really important policy concern about how those things are connected. And we'll be talking, Ed Marks is going to be bringing the report about the budget submission from the Planning Department to the administrator and giving us ammunition for supporting it. So this Thursday at 3 o'clock.
Questions? Boy, you're easy tonight. Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is chair.
Thank you, Mike. Our meeting is 8:14 at 4 p.m. here, and I neglected to mention something under privilege of the floor, that the Trumansburg Philomathic Library, or TPL as I call it, received $3,000, compliments of Senator Tom O'Mara, to operate a fine-free system. If you have an overdue book, and you know how all that, when I was in elementary school and kids were in my class, there was a great fear of what happened to you if your book was overdue. They would come after your parents or whatever. In Trumansburg, they got this money from Senator O'Mara, and they're going to have a fine-free library, and that's a pretty cool thing, I think. And that ends my report. And that, the second part should have been done earlier. I apologize for that.
Jim reminds me of an old Seinfeld episode. Peter Stein.
Question for me, Peter?
Yeah. What in the world is a fine-free library? You don't have to give it back?
You have to give it back, but if you come in and you're a week late, they're not going to make you get down on the floor and empty your pockets, you know? I mean, you're going to be able to hand your book back, and hopefully there will not be a fine. And I think the study was done, and the kind of people who would most benefit from it are people, young children who come from families that, you know, maybe don't have the money and those kinds of things. They would benefit that, and they take books home and sometimes forget to bring them back. And hopefully now they can, the fear of what's going to happen to me will be eliminated, at least in the Trumansburg Library. And I think that's a good thing.
Anything else for Jim? Jim, anything on the budget process you want to mention?
Well, the county administrator will be giving us the budget first meeting in September. And I've had conferences or discussions with the county administrator, and it's his hope and certainly my hope that we get presented a budget that is close to or on target with the 2.4 that we asked about way back at the end of April. And given the fact that the county administrator now calls himself the lame duck, I'm sure that will happen. I have great confidence that will happen. Do you have a specific question?
Just keep the lame duck away from the algae plumes now.
Yeah, right. No, I I'm looking forward to September and getting to work on that. People will be getting doodle polled for when you're available. The dates are set, and we will begin promptly in September.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
So is the technical definition of a lame duck, you know, what, just that he's announced, or after there's somebody actually scheduled to come and it's, you can't change your mind? I don't know. We have to look that one up.
All right. Let's go to the Jail Study Committee. Rich John is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. The Jail Study Committee met on July 20th as well. And I realize I forgot to mention with the Public Safety Committee will be meeting on August 17th, and so does the Jail Study Committee. That will be the next meeting, August 17th. We had a report from our consultants, CGR, and they presented their report that has gotten a fair amount of attention. There was a lot of very good public comment and comment from committee members. We have a lot of work to do, and the immediate issue is responding to the Commissioner of Corrections. That, I believe, a letter has gone out, and so we'll wait for their reaction. We would like to try to see if there's a longer-term waiver that will be available to the county while we try to implement recommendations from the report. I anticipated our August 17th meeting will have report from some of the affected departments and agencies talking about projected costs and feasibility of implementing recommendations, different recommendations to try to reduce the number of beds use in the jail. We also have a question about a coordinator position that the report recommended, so that will be a topic of discussion. I also think we're going to spend some time on trying to set priorities. There's lots of different directions we can go and tasks we could undertake. I certainly have ideas about where we should be heading, but I'm sure the committee will weigh in. So it should be a very good discussion, and I also hope to get some preliminary comment from the director of the jail and the sheriff's department on capital improvements to the jail. One of the things that certainly came out of the report is that we have an aging facility. Regardless of bed count, there's things that need to be done to the facility to maintain safety and to make it efficient and functioning the way we want it to, and to meet the needs of the report. So we're going to probably have some capital discussion as well. Should be a good meeting.
Questions? Jim Dennis.
Rich, I think you ought to mention a little bit about the meeting that we both attended in Enfield on July 27th. And you were invited as chair of the Jail Study Committee, and it was an ad hoc group of Enfield people and some of the decarcerate Tompkins people.
Well, again, the discussion is continuing in our community about issues related to incarceration, and it's going to be a conversation that will go on, and that's a healthy thing, I think, in our community. But we did have an opportunity to go out to Enfield, and there were about 15 people there. It was a lively discussion. There were a couple people who had been in prisons rather than a local jail and talked about their experience, and that was really moving. There's a lot of varied viewpoints, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Martha Robertson.
One of the issues in looking through the recommendations from CGR, there are a lot of recommendations that have to do with the operation of the courts, and which we cannot, you know, influence. We are not, it's not up to the legislature. You think about the separation of powers in the Supreme Court versus the Senate, you know, the Congress and the President. So there's a separation of powers. So, but the town courts are, the town justices are elected, and there are a lot of instances where people get elected without any opposition and without any knowledge, and people should know that there, you do not have to be an attorney, you do not have to have any legal background in New York State to be elected a municipal judge. And I was able to get the information from Steve DeWitt at the Board of Elections about who's up for election this year. Harold Phoenix in the town of Caroline is actually retiring, so his seat is being, there are two, this is for town justice. The for Gary Reinbold is running as a Democrat. Brett Carey is running as a Republican. Betty Poole in the town of Enfield, her term is up, and she's running for reelection at the moment unopposed. And Jim Salk is in the town of Ithaca running for reelection, also unopposed at the moment. If anybody's interested in seeing their courts, Betty Poole's court sessions are Mondays at 5 o'clock in the Enfield Community Building, and Jim Salk in the town of Ithaca courtroom across the street here, Thursdays at 9. So I encourage people to take a look and to learn about their local justices, and because these are, they have a great deal of authority, and even if the district attorney recommends no bail, which he has been doing as a policy matter on basically with a nonviolent, with wherever possible, no money bail, it's up to the justice whether to impose bail or not. So this needs to be a campaign issue if people are concerned about this. This is what people, you know, there's a record that an elected official runs on, and it's important for us to notice that we have some of, you know, power in this, in that way. Thanks. I maybe should have done that during public comment, but or legislator comment, but I just thought of it now.
Martha, I agree with you that the courts are an essential element in making sure, if we have an overall plan, that it's successful, because obviously the justices make key decisions about bail and incarceration. So one of the things I had on my task list was to try to have more input from the local courts to the jail study committee. It is essential that we hear from them on what they feel is feasible and what their positions are on bail and release on recognizance, release under supervision and day reporting, the SWAP program, service work alternatives program as an alternative where people work in the community rather than going to jail. These are all options that we can use to keep our bed count down and in appropriate circumstances maybe get a better outcome. But it would be great to hear that directly from the judges. The jail study consultants, I believe, talked to four of the justices directly, but it would help us to hear from more.
Leslin.
Thank you, Martha, for that. I think the public really and truly does need to know that. I think often people think that we have the authority to make those decisions, and we don't. This question is for Joe. Please remind me, I know TCOG was doing some work around the justices, the whole court system, and I don't remember what became of that. I remember you reported, but please.
Yeah, there was a long and thorough study done. It took over a year, chaired by Ray Schlatter, with a number of recommendations that came out of it. One of which was the no bail, was the release, presumptive release on recognizance, which I think helped with the new district attorney adopting that plan. They recommended a third county court judge, something that we're beginning to work on now. Recommended centralized arraignment. You know, we tried on that. We tried to drive that and didn't get very far on that. So the report is done. Several of the recommendations are finding their way into change, but I think several others have not been successful.
Ask a quick follow-up. The justices in our other municipal courts, of course, not the county or city court, those are a little different. Were they part of the conversation with this, and was there some reaction from them, especially around the no bail part of it?
They were very much a part of the conversation. In fact, Betty Poole, who was the head of the Magistrates Association, was a task force member. Glenn Galbraith, Bill Chernish became almost a member of the group, so that the judiciary was well represented in town and village courts. Did sign off on the final recommendations, which included the ROLR and all the other things that were in there. They also advocated for the LEAD program, which you know we're trying to push forward on that, and several other things. So absolutely, they had several seats at the table.
All right. Thank you. That was all I wanted.
Thank you. Any other questions? Ruslan, you can keep the floor, and you chair the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was getting a headache, but I perked up when Jim talked about the no fine. What did you call it? The no fine thing there at the library.
Fine free.
Thank you. No bail, fine free. Because it, my brain started to go in overtime, and I think about many of the low income and people who are struggling with making their bills. And wonder if there's a way that such a thing, and I'm talking to all the landlords and whoever else out there, could happen for the folks who maybe not make their rent payment by the 5th of the month, but they can make it by the 6th of the month, and they still get that additional fine, that late fee that they can ill afford. So maybe it's a conversation. I'm sorry, this is my WDIC brain working. Maybe there's a conversation that could be had, and how do we not do that to folks, especially those who already can't, you know, afford, can barely make the rent. And you get a grace period. It's due on the 1st. You get until the 5th. You couldn't make it because payday is the 6th, and then you pay on the 6th, and you still get that $30, $35, $45 fine. Maybe there's a way for us to figure out, not us, I don't know who it is, how we can have that fine-free thing. I don't know what the late fee does. But we've just heard from too many people who this has become a huge problem for many of them. And it's causing people to lose their housing. You know, it's not a month behind. It's a couple of days. So, anyhow, that's my brain working overtime over here when I hear things like that. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee did meet on July 26th. We had a very good meeting, actually. Some of the agenda topics that we covered, Joe and I had a brief check-in after our June meeting about the whole living wage issue. You had folks come here to us and ask about making the minimum wage a living wage here in Tompkins County, and so we continued our conversation, and the group outside of us through the Worker Center continued to talk about that. And the potential of putting together a group of stakeholders, I don't like that word, but a group of people who are concerned about this issue from all ends of the spectrum, not just those who are necessarily right off the bat in favor, to take a look at it and see what would that really mean for us as a county if we were able to do it, and could we? So, that's one of the things that we talked a little bit about at the Workforce Diversity Committee. We have a wonderful and still evolving onboarding process when new employees come into the county. They go through our HR office and learn all about, you know, our policies, our procedures, expectations. We roll out the welcome mat. And at WDIC, for a number of years now, we've been talking about what's our offboarding process when county employees leave, aside from telling them about COBRA and here are the benefits you get when you leave. What else do we do for folks? A big part of that is the exit interview. And I think we're getting to the place with our HR department that we want to move in that direction. The HR department will bring a recommendation. So we got a beautiful presentation by Michelle Rios Dominguez, our manager of talent acquisition and employee engagement. On exit interviews and some of the pros and cons of doing those. We are very much interested in the committee in pursuing that because people might have things to say about how we can improve the way we do business as a county relative to our employees, whether someone is voluntarily or involuntarily leave our service. Of course, there are some legal parameters. If somebody had been fired from our service and they say something to us, what do we do with that information? So there's still more work to be done, but we're moving in the direction of we should at least allow the opportunity for an exit interview so we can hear from folks and we can grow and learn from that. So that's one of the things we did. We also had a presentation on our ADA transition plan development. Just so that I'm very accurate in what I'm saying to you. The ADA transition plan reflects Tompkins County government's long-term commitment to ADA compliance. The purpose of the plan is to identify any kind of structural barriers to its public facilities and, where structurally feasible, schedule and implement improvements in order to remove or mitigate the impact of those barriers. So we know that over the years we've been looking at everything from making sure we have enough handicap accessible parking spaces, that they're clearly marked, that our doors folks can get in and out of. Some of them have been retrofitted with push buttons. Some of them just can't. Looking at where all of our departments are located and are they accessible. So this plan is looking at all of that. Paula Younger and Alan Lockett facilities came and did the presentation for us. WDIC has been asking about this as part of what we look at. And every a few years, we are required, I believe, to have an ADA assessment. And so we got a peek at the plan and the steps and what's next. So they're identifying what facilities, identifying what needs to happen, and then the next move is to then create a work plan of how do we go through taking care of the things that need to be taken care of. So we're very thankful to get that. Public participation toolkit, one of the things that also came out of that, Paula helped us navigate through our website, the public participation toolkit, so that's up there, TompkinsCounty.gov, TCCP/public participation. And if you need any more information about it, I'm sure Paula will be happy to share. We can ask her when I'm done to share a little bit more about what that means. And our ongoing topic on our agenda is the climate survey because we're coming up on year three. 2018 is when we need to once again take a pulse on our workplace climate, see where we are, how we're doing, and how we've been doing since the last survey. What are some of the things we've put in place? You know, where are people seeing changes? Are employees feeling any better about feeling more valued about working for the county? Most of the people who responded said they really like working for the county, but there were some areas that we had to do some work around. How are we in terms of our diversity higher, and how are we in terms of our diversity, inclusion, and retention? So we're coming up to that point. We have some individuals within our organization, department heads and others, who have agreed to head up the teams, do some, you know, marketing as well as survey development, the tool development, so we can move forward. It is our hope to be able to use the same vendor again, and I know Paul has been waiting for a response from them. Shouldn't the ticket price shouldn't be as it was the first time around when they had to do a lot of work in developing the tool and implementing it. It's already there. We probably need to do some tweaking to it so that we can roll it out again. And last but not least, at our committee, we also talked about a resolution we tried to bring last year, recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day, the second Monday in October, as a county. There are other organizations within our community that have done this. They have not said to replace anything with anything. They're just asking for an addition for the day to be recognized as Indigenous Peoples Day. It is our intention as WDIC to bring it again to budget and to this full legislature, and I hope that we will move in that direction as well. The Ithaca City School District has done it. We know that Cornell has, and the City of Ithaca, George here, is also looking at bringing resolutions of that effect, and I hope that Tompkins County will join its colleagues in doing the same. And that is my report. We were busy.
Sounds like. Questions for Leslie? Thank you, Leslie.
My pleasure.
Minutes of July 18th. Someone want to move those? Been moved by Anna, seconded by Rich. All in favor of the minutes?
Wait. I think I
Any
might
discussion?
Have...
I'm
wait,
sorry.
I have. A, I think I.
Go ahead,
have
Carol.
A question. I have to see where it was. Sorry. You know, I read it in the online version. There was somewhere where there wasn't a complete sentence, but I don't remember where it was. So if I find it, I will tell Kathy. Sorry. Oh, never mind.
Okay. We vote then. All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One opposed. Any unfinished business? I had one thing I had meant to say, that is out of the Bicentennial Commission. And Martha, you asked about signed dedications for the historic markers. There are two scheduled on the 12th. That's a Saturday morning. Unfortunately, they're 2 hours apart. One is in Danby at the town hall, and the other, and that's at 10 a.m., and the other is at Newfield at 12 noon. And hopefully some of us can get out to those, if not both of them, at least one or the other. And help the Bicentennial Commission to celebrate those important events of the dedication of those markers. Now, I'd like to get a motion to go into executive session to discuss a personnel issue about a particular person. We would go into executive session, we would come out, we would not take action. And the executive session, we would go into break, and we would come out after the break. We will start the executive session. So is there someone who wants to move that? Moved by Dooley Kiefer, seconded by Jim Dennis. All in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed? So when we come out after the executive session, we will adjourn. Thank you, everyone. Thanks to Jim Blizzard. Thanks to Marsha Lynch. Thanks to Michelle Pothorf and Kathy Colbert. All right.